As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I'm here, so.
I'm Shea Gibbs-Alexander and I'm down to dunk.
Howdy, Oklahoma.
My name is Chet Holmgren and I'm down to dunk.
Dead gum.
I'm Josh Giddey, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Lou Dort,
and I'm down to dunk.
Is that like you eat them together?
Everybody tells him to get the bag of burgers.
I need like a straw. Like.
Howdy. I'm an artist on the court.
This is Jay Will, and I'm down to dunk.
My name is Kendrick Williams, and I'm down to dunk.
It might be Aaron Wiggins.
This is a troll. It's a troll. I'm trolling.
Howdy, Papa.
Because I think it would take away from who he is, you know? Yeah.
I love Oklahoma. I love Oklahoma to death.
This is Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort.
Perfect. Good. Very good.
I like the hat.
You like the hat?
Vava.
This is J-Dub, and I'm down to dunk. I've been doing a lot of dunking.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schleck. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me, as always, is my good friend, Michele Barra. Michele, what's up?
Where do I start? I started this morning at 5:45.
Oh.
It took me an hour and a half to watch the game because, I mean, I have to realize that Chromecast and the NBA app just don't go along together.
Yeah,
I tried it in the app, in the phone, and then cast, and it was like on and off for an hour. It was.
I've heard a Roku is good. I use not Apple TV. I have used Apple TV. It's okay, but I use Amazon Fire Stick. Works pretty good.
We don't have the app in Europe.
Seriously.
Yes.
That's terrible.
I bought it because I read that it was available and it's not.
Wow.
Or I'm not able to install it.
Wow.
So I'm pretty miffed and peeved.
You should be miffed. That's terrible. That's awful. Just like the Thunder were last night in Milwaukee, which was really disappointing because it was like this marquee matchup where it's like everybody's playing. It's Giannis and Middleton and, you know, Dame is in the game. And he got, you know, a full squad Thunder team, and it's fizzled out. They were in it, yeah. No barking, which is very, very frustrating. No bark Degnault. Bark Dognault at the end of this one.
Bark Dognault. That's great.
Milwaukee, this was a close game through halftime, and they just blew the doors off them in the third quarter. And because I'm just a glutton for punishment. I went back and looked at all the threes this morning just to see, okay, what's the deal here? And because even more punishment was on the way, I decided to put together clips of all these threes. And so you can go watch them.
Because you're a psycho, Andrea.
Straight up psycho behavior. It was just, it was really bad. But I wanted to just, because as I'm watching, I'm thinking to myself, I don't hate the approach. They keep finding guys on the perimeter for like either uncontested or like semi-open threes that are within rhythm They're getting in the paint. You got Chet shooting a corner three there at the start of the third quarter. Awesome. He misses. You have Shea with a wide open spot up three. Misses. Dang. Shea with a step back three, which he's been testing, which you don't want to discourage him from because he needs to take that shot. Misses. Yeah. Above the break three from Chet. Man, missed it. Transition three from Chet. Man, I wanted to take more. This is awesome. Great. Sidestep wide open three for Lu Dort. He's made that all season. Miss. You know, open Kenny Hustle three. Clank. You know, over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, the process isn't terrible. Open corner three for Cason Wallace happened twice in that. You know, back to back. Clank, clank. You know, Isaiah Joe gets his shot blocked by Pat Bev. That was like maybe the worst three. There was like a very, there was a very rushed Chet three that missed. There was an air ball Josh Giddey three. You know, there were some that just weren't that good. But for the most part, these were good shots. There was a wide open corner three from Kenny Hustle, who's been good all season.
And not just in the third, Andrew. I remember myself stopping the game, mainly because I was done and watching squares instead of human beings. But I stopped that and said, okay, they are 4 out of 15, and they are just down 4.
Yeah.
This is the great news. I mean, if this was a normal game, they would have been like up 15.
Mm-hmm.
Because the quality of shots that they were generating was insane. And now we need to talk about the elephant in the room, which is Shea is not being great over the past 2 weeks, at least. We had a tweet asking to comment on this. Matt Moore showed a picture of the expected plus minus generated by Shea, which is clearly on the downward side.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that OKC generated bad shots, or they just missed a ton of shots, mm-hmm. which can happen. Mm-hmm. Can happen even for a stretch of games. I don't think that they have to change the approach. I do think that they roll over when Milwaukee put a little bit of pressure, which is the most concerning stuff. Mm-hmm. Not that they lost the game, which can happen. Giannis was great. But again, for, I would say, 30 minutes, they played better than Milwaukee, I thought. Yeah. They just missed a lot of shots.
They just missed a ton of shots. And Shea, in his last six games, 24.5 points per game, 6 boards, 5 assists. 3 turnovers, which is unlike him, too. Mm-hmm. Have that many. 2.3 steals, still on par with where he's been all season. Shooting 48, 22, 73.
Yeah.
I mean, that there has been a dip in production. There's been a dip in just efficiency overall from him.
Yeah.
And what is that? I don't know. I mean, listen, these are human beings that have lots of variables that go on around them. I don't know why some people think he's hurt. I don't see him like wincing. I don't see him having certain things. You know, we would see players in the past, like Paul George would have like all these, like his shoulder would be like taped up, you know, a ton.
Yeah.
And like there were like visible things that you could see that said like, oh, this guy's hurt. I don't necessarily see the same things with Shea. Everybody is feeling it right now. I mean, it's March 25th in the NBA. This is a long season. 82 games is a lot of games. And could Shea be sore or tired? Sure. I think that most people would be in his shoes. I mean, he's played 34 minutes per game during that stretch. It's a lot of minutes. It's a lot of wear and tear. The good news for the Thunder is that they're not going to be in the play-in tournament, which gives them like a little bit of time off, you know, that week as the play-in tournament kind of plays out and you get to really rest up and scout and do everything you need to do, which is a good thing for them. And then the playoffs start that Saturday. So that's good news that rest is on the way. But, you know, this week they're playing a lot of games on the road, and this starts you know, a long road trip. They come back Wednesday and play in OKC, but it's back for a short trip. They play 2 games in OKC Wednesday, Friday, and then back on the road to the East Coast, where it's New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Indiana, Charlotte, and then they end the season at home. So the good thing is after that, they basically get 2 full weeks at home because they'll start, they will presumably start a playoff series at home as well. And so they get the last 4 games at home. Not that they're going to be easy opponents, but they get the last 4 games, Sacramento, San Antonio, Milwaukee, Dallas. And who knows with Milwaukee and Dallas, who's playing, you know, does anybody have the playoffs locked up? If they do, you know, even it could be the Thunder that are like locked into the 2 seed, you know, by that time.
Yeah.
And then they can sit guys at the end of the season, you know, and not care about the results. You know, those are things that can happen. But am I concerned? No, I haven't heard anything that makes me feel concerned. You know, the results aren't what we want them to be. But again, like, this is still a young team that has a lot to figure out. And I think that's something, too, that we forget. Is like, this is one game of 82 that when we get to October of next year, I can't imagine that we're going to be talking about this game, you know, for this team. It was a bad game. They didn't play well. They got hammered on the boards. The Bucks were way more physical than the Thunder were throughout the game, especially in the third quarter. Although I liked the process of finding those shots, I did not love the physicality from the Thunder, especially with Giannis. It just felt like, you never want to say like an NBA player is scared of another NBA player, but they were not very physical with Giannis. Like, they needed to be more physical with Giannis, even though he's going to out physical you. I didn't see any pushback or a whole lot.
Yeah, nothing the third. The beginning of the game, probably yes.
But the third, like, do you agree? Like, I was watching the third quarter and thinking, like, what, like, what's going on? Like, there's no like bodies flying at Giannis. Like you have to keep going. And they
rolled over.
They kind of stopped.
I think that at a certain point, when he had one or two putback dunk, it was like done. I said, okay, we're not into this. Shea missed a couple of gimme jumpers, and the whole team melted. It happened in Dallas. It happened against Milwaukee. I don't think that this it doesn't say a lot about this team in general. It says that sometimes when they don't meet the physicality of the opponent, they may be outmatched. And again, I don't mind losing a game by a lot compared to like losing close games. I don't think that there is any value in that. Like, yeah, if you're up and down, then yes. But OKC is into many. It was out of very few games. Denver, Dallas, and this one, and probably one of them forgetting right now. So it's not that you have to. It stands out because it almost never happens.
Yeah, this is their eighth double-digit loss of the season, and only their third blowout, like 20 points or more. So this is the third of the ones that you referenced, and then
I bad losses. Like the one against Detroit was a bad loss.
That was a bad loss. Yeah, and it wasn't even. I mean, it wasn't a 20-point loss, you know. I mean, so I referenced the Mavs just because they're like another team that's good that has like a young leader of their team, and they've had 19 double-digit losses. You know, like you feel bad today about theirs, but that was only the eighth time. You know, the Mavs have had more than double that many, you know, double-digit losses. So, like, I know that we want everything to mean something so much. Whenever we're watching the team, like, we want every game to mean something, whether that's like, you know, my team is the best team or this, you know, or like, oh my gosh, we can't win. Like, not every game means something, you know. The Nuggets.
Especially games where you generate like 15 wide open threes and you make four. Like,
you miss them. You miss all of them. You miss a vast majority of them. I mean, Denver lost to Dallas a week ago. And I'm sorry, that game doesn't mean anything. Like, we want, and like, and I exist within the world where we have to like almost talk about everything as if it means something.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious, that game last night didn't really mean a whole lot. Do I think the Thunder need to take some lessons from it? Yes. I think they need to learn things from it. I think they need to be more physical. Is it the most meaningful game? No. Was that Dallas game where Dallas beat Denver a meaningful game where they went down the stretch and they made some mistakes in crunch time? Does that mean something for the Nuggets? No. Like, the Nuggets are still the favorite to win the West, and it wouldn't matter if they won that game by 100 or lost it by 100. It just wouldn't matter. And that's the thing about the 82-game season is it's a lot of games. And you're gonna have games where things don't go your way. And like that last night, that was part of it. Part of it was the Thunder's fault, and part of it wasn't. Part of it was just sometimes shots going in are not always within your grasp.
Yeah. There is a lesson that I think this game poses to OKC, which is throughout the season, they struggled a lot. And you and Alex mentioned that. I don't remember when, but I think a couple of weeks ago, maybe more recently than that, that when OKC is not able to generate enough rim pressure because there is a very good rim protector, then they have a hard time winning those games. Mm-hmm. And I think that this one qualifies. I do think that they sometimes, when they are wide open from three, they start and they are not hitting. The team just shrunks his defense, and OKC takes early threes in the shot clock, which is something that when the threes are going in, it's great because you are putting a lot of pressure on the opponent. Mm-hmm. When you are like maybe not in the same situation and you start missing some, I think that you need to vary a little bit. And just try to do different stuff. Try to give the opponent different looks, which is also what Mark Daigneault did. They tried to go big, then they tried to go small. They tried to put Hayward. They tried to put Muscala. They tried a lot. And sometimes when you shot 23% on wide open threes, you can do many things, but you are probably going to lose the game anyway.
Yeah,
like it's not that you need to like rework your entire season because of a game like this. The lessons that you can get again are, hey, can we, when we can't apply rim pressure and we are not shooting from three, are we bound for a loss or can we find something else? And also, like, this game shows that Milwaukee can go to a very good level on defense, which is scary for the Eastern Conference teams, mm-hmm. But it's not really something that she should worry in general.
Yeah, no. Like, that's, it's not like this team, they could match up with them in the second round or something. Like, that's, But, yeah, Milwaukee looked really good. Milwaukee played great yesterday. And they're going to have a chance to win the East. You know, like, they do. You mentioned the Thunder and can they win if they shoot this bad. They've shot worse than this four times. Orlando, New Orleans, Denver, Golden State. Funny enough, they were all at home. This was the worst road game performance for them as far as shooting from three. But they won two of them. They beat Golden State and Orlando at home while they shot this poorly. Actually, they shot worse from three. And so, one, they took less threes in these games for the most part, and they got to the hoop a lot more. And that's the thing. As Shea's, to me, it's, I don't know if Shea's like injured. He may be worn out. He's taken less shots in the paint recently. He's getting to the hoop a little bit less recently. He's taken more mid-range shots. He's taken more threes. He's not making them, and that doesn't look great. But I don't have concerns about Shea, like long-term or even short-term with like what's going on with this team. I think it's a slump. I think everybody has these points in the year where it's just, it's exhausting. You're still, the light's not quite at the, you can't quite see the light at the end of the tunnel yet because you have like this giant road trip coming up after you come home. You have this back-to-back against the Pelicans and the Rockets, which now looks a lot more difficult than it did previously. Yeah. It's a tough stretch. I mean, they don't have a game that's like, oh my gosh, the Thunder just, they have to win this game. Really until they play Charlotte in not a week, but in 2 weeks, basically. And so, because it's New Orleans, Houston, Phoenix, Knicks, Philly, Boston, Indy, Charlotte. And like, you should beat Charlotte, but it's also like tough because it's the last game of a road trip, which is notoriously like a trap game.
Yeah.
So
they need to win 2-3 games in over the next, even 4 would be ideal. Like go 4-7 over the next 11 game, 4-6 would be best for them.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. I'll say this. They need to win more than that if Shays has any hope of winning the MVP, because these kinds of performances could slam that hope shut. Yeah. Like this was, and we talked about it last week. Shea has an opportunity in front of him to go grab this MVP trophy. And if he plays like this, if he continues the 27 points per game or whatever he's been, 24 points per game, it's a good player. You can still win games with that, but you're not going to win most valuable player. You know, it's going to go to Nikola Jokic, and that's fine. Like the season will not be judged on whether he wins the MVP or not. Was he in the preseason top 5? Like probably not. It's not somebody that we would have totally expected to be there. But a few weeks ago, I was adamant that he would win it if he kept playing the way that he did, and he's slowed down a little bit. And now
is it your fault?
If you'd like to blame me, I'll take the blame.
Yeah, sure. I'll take it. Why not?
I'll take it.
It's a new sport. Let's blame Andrew for dream scenarios that are not becoming reality.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, shooting bad happens, and you will lose games when you do. The Thunder have shot the ball well, more often than not, and even won games when they haven't shot the ball very well. So that's just the nature of the game. And like people are like, well, what's going to happen in the playoffs if they miss these shots? Well, they'll probably lose games if they miss a lot of shots. But
I think that the most concerning thing that is happening after the trade deadline and the All-Star break is that the second unit with Shea are not that effective anymore. I don't think that there is a groove between him, Hayward, and the unit that is playing. I mean, which is a little bit concerning, to be honest, because that unit was one where, I mean, okay, now there is a second unit and we go on a run. There was a moment where they tried Giddy with that unit and it was terrible. Then they started putting Hayward in that unit to give him a little bit more on-ball reps, because with Dub and Giddy and Chet, there was no opportunity. But it's not really working. So I do think that if something has to be changed in terms of rotation, that could be a place to look at, because it's not functioning to a high level, and it's not spacing the floor for Shea, which is a little bit worrisome to me. Because I do think that the Hayward trade right now has removed one lineup that was working very well, which was the Mitsich, J-Dub, Chet lineup, which was incredibly good. The second unit with J-Dub, it's still good. But the one with Shea, not so much. So I do wonder if it's just random or if it's something that, okay, we need to look at something else in order to give Shea a little bit of a boost.
Yeah. Do you have the numbers, by the way, behind that? want to try to sort them real quick if you don't
No. but I looked at the plus minus for Shea over the past, I would say, 10 games, and it was not overly positive.
Yeah.
And the starting unit was positive. So I did reverse math on that.
Yeah, the starting unit up to this point is plus 8.6. It's actually getting a little bit better.
Yeah, that's why. That's why I'm quite convinced that unit is not good. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I... Well, and also, I mean, we haven't mentioned Josh. Josh was really good yesterday. That was like one of the best Josh Giddey games in a while. And some of it is like the shots are going in, and it looks better when the shots are going in. Feel a little bit more hopeful when the shots are going in. I thought he rebounded better. I thought that he passed the ball better. He looked like he was the best. I mean, he was the best player. He had 15 points at halftime and was the best player for them in a half.
Hey, 19-9-8.
That's 19-9-8 is pretty good. He looked good. That was a game where you're like, oh, okay, I can see how this would work. But it also like depends on the shot going in. And so there's caveats to all of this. But shout out to Josh Giddey, who had a really good game yesterday. And we'll continue to play for this team. We'll continue to be out there. But yeah. So... Yeah, we need, if you have normal Shea, I think you're obviously much more competitive. This was one of Shea's worst games of the season. Yeah. You know, the worst one is obviously the one against Denver where he had 7 points, which just seems impossible that actually happened this season. I don't even know what to think about that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to filter some lineups with Shea, and I'm going to put Chet off the court because oftentimes those lineups include...
Or Dub off the court.
We could do both of them off the court because they both leave during the second quarter.
Yeah.
All right.
And are you doing it on the Clean the Glass?
Yes.
Yeah, for the season, I think that those lineups are still very good.
Very positive, plus 12.
Yeah. The point is, to me, that those lineups are not as positive as of late.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not sure that you can really...
You can't filter the time.
I don't think so.
On there.
No.
But, anyway. That's...
No, which is a bummer.
Yeah. There's, I mean... Yeah, with Dub, including Dub, they're a plus 12.8, so it's a little bit more positive. I wonder what it's like with just Chet and no J-Dub.
It's weird that you cannot filter those, but it's actually...
It's actually a little bit worse with just Chet and Shea. Included on the court. Let me see with just those two. Sorry, this is terrible podcasting. This is awful. I'm just like trapped in this now. Plus nine.
No, I trapped you into something that is not really number based. but I do think that there is some reality to that. I don't see the same wide open stuff that Shea used to get at the rim. Yeah. It was much easier, much free flowing. Even if it was effective, which I don't think it is. I'm quite convinced that the number doesn't look the same as before, but it's a bit clunky, and I can't pinpoint why.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a little bit more of Dort in those units, but I do not think that is a reason enough. There is a little bit less of Kenrich maybe, but yesterday there was a lot of Kenrich, and it's not. I don't know. It's weird. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is just Shea that is not quick enough or doesn't have the same burst getting at the rim, which creates a different complexity. Maybe he's refusing some opportunities to take shots because he doesn't feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. We don't know, but I do think that there is a decent difference between how Shea used to play with that second unit and how he's playing now. I also hate the fact that Wiggins is not playing with Shea anymore. which I don't really like that, because I do think that Wiggins is one of those guys that is able to space the court for you while being decent enough at cutting and doing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas Hayward is not the same player. So I don't know. This was a bad game for Hayward as well. I mean, he just gave nothing to the cause, which...
Yeah, he just doesn't shoot it enough, you know? He took one three, took two other shots. He had three assists. Like, he consistently has, like, two or three or four assists per game.
Yeah.
He's moving the ball, but he's always looking to move the ball first before anything else. And I think what they need from the bench is, like, they need more scoring, because Isaiah Joe comes in the game, and Isaiah Joe just didn't hardly play in this game, which was just kind of a little bit strange. And some of it is that they want to get a look at other guys. But if, like, Joe and Wiggins and Kaysen are not scoring a whole lot, which could be the case a lot of nights, like, these guys are role players. Like, they're strictly role players. They're not guys that are going to go get you a bucket. You just wish that you could get a game where it's like, hey, here's Gordon Hayward. Like where is he? You know, he had games this season within the last 82 games where he is like the go-to scorer for a team.
Yeah.
You know, like, where is that? And I know that he does. My assumption, and maybe I should just burn my assumptions. My assumption is that he doesn't want to step on anybody's toes. He wants to kind of fit in. He doesn't want to disrupt what they're doing, but it's almost more disruptive for him to not just be himself than it is for him to do this. Like, I don't think
it serves any cause doing just, hey, I'm getting the ball, making three dribbles, and put it away. Like, give it to someone else. I don't think that is a good process, mainly because it's always the same stuff.
Yeah.
And so what is the value in that? I don't know where is the value. Speaking of Isaiah Joe, like, when you have games like this, I do wonder, why don't you try to push a little bit? Just give us a little bit of what he can be. Like, the shooting doesn't go. Okay, you don't want to start not to start Giddy because he was playing very well. Mm-hmm. Okay, just start Isaiah Joe instead of Lu Dort, just to see.
Yeah.
10 minutes. Is it terrible? Well, you're subbing back. Like, hey, we need to just go all offense for 5 minutes because we are not in a rhythm offensively. Mm-hmm. Let's just try to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And credit to Lou, he was having a great game against Lillard defensively.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when the offense is clunky, just try to change a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that Joe could have an impact on that unit. Especially if you put him in for Lou. And I think, I don't know, like, they believe in Lou. And the shots that he took were, like, very normal Lu Dort shots. They just didn't go in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I don't think that there was, like, necessarily something that Mark could have done or did wrong or, I don't know. Like, I mean, he's been doing this thing, and some people are like, why did he sub in Mike Muscala and Lindy Waters at the end of the quarter? Like, what's going on? He's been doing that all year. You know, he's been trying to get these bomber lineups there at the end. He's doing it with Bertans. Now he's doing it. I mean, he's just trying to throw something in at the end of a quarter just to see if, like, he can space out or if he can get a three or if he can get a wide open driving lane for Shea. A lot of times it ends up being a driving lane for Shea. This time it was a Lindy Waters corner three that didn't go in. You know, I don't know. So at some point, one of those lineups is really going to work, and it could end up shifting a game, you know, where you get a three at the end of a quarter, and it's very helpful. But when it doesn't work, and this was, like, very much when the process doesn't work, it's like, what do we blame? Like, how do we blame? Where do I go to with my frustration with this team? And, like, sometimes it's just they didn't play well. They didn't play with enough force in the second half. They took the right kinds of shots. They missed the right kinds of shots. Sometimes you're going to miss the right kinds of shots. And J-Dub talked about it after the game. He's like, I don't know. Like, we missed a lot of good shots. Like, and he said, like, this is basketball. It's like, yeah, like, this is basketball. This is the NBA. You know, teams have. Yeah. I mean, ask Milwaukee. Milwaukee's lost 25 games. Did they look good in those 25 games that they lost? 25 times they've lost. That team that just absolutely trucked the Thunder. That team. They lost 25 times. Ask their fans how they felt after 25 of those times. Didn't feel very good. You know, this is part of playing in the NBA. The NBA is very good. This is a really good team that is a more veteran team than the Thunder with Lillard and Brooke Lopez and Middleton and Giannis. Like, they just know how to play. I don't think we have an update on Lou Dort, who did get his nose crunched in this game by Chris Middleton. He had a bloody nose. I don't know that it's broken. I don't know if it is. We may get masked Dort here in the next, you know, couple games. And you're certainly going to need a guy like Lou to be playing, who provides a lot of physicality and force himself against a team like New Orleans, who's playing. I mean, they're one of the better teams in the league right now. Let's see. Let me look at the last five games and see where they're at. They're fourth in net rating in the last five games. The Pelicans are. So they're playing great right now. Mm-hmm. They're fourth in defense, and their offense isn't quite as good. 10th in offense over the last five games. Thunder, I don't even know if it's worth mentioning where they're at in the last five games. Can probably guess yourself. They're about average. Actually, they're exactly average. 15th in net rating. Still positive, but 15th in net rating over the last five games. So, better than the Clippers, better than the Warriors, who are both teams.
Yeah, the good thing, if you want to find positive, is that, yeah, they are not super duper awesome, but they're still, 8-2, 7-3 over the past 10 games.
I mean, they have a very positive record over the last 10 games, which is just funny. Like, we feel like this is terrible. Like, look at what's happening in LA. 7-3 in the last 10 games. You know, like, the Clippers are 5-5 in the last 10 and thought they looked unbeatable at portions of this season. They look extremely beatable right now, you know. And so, like, the ebbs and flows happen. I mean, for crying out loud, the Bucks are 6-4 over their last 10. You know?
Yeah, they played a great game. This is also something that we need to stress and re-stress and re-stress. I mean, you face an opponent. They played remarkably well on defense. They had a plan, a risky plan. The plan was, hey, let's allow OKC to take any shot that they want from three. And if they beat us from three, we are cooked. If not, we may win the game. That's like, to play like this against the best defensive team in the league, the best shooting team in the league, it's not something awesome in general. I mean, you probably lose a lot of times if you play that kind of style. So, I mean, yes, at some point you can say, okay, let's try to find any problem that OKC had last night. And there were many, but I mean, they are the best team in the league shooting the basketball, and they were allowed to take wide open threes. This doesn't look like a very good technique or a very good plan. I mean, the Warriors did the same in the first game in Oracle earlier this season, and they were destroyed because Kazan had a great game shooting-wise, Dort had a great game shooting-wise, mm-hmm. Chet had a great game, mm-hmm. and they destroyed them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if OKC has a normal night, this is a close game and maybe a win for OKC. Even if Shea plays badly, even if they don't get all the rebounds, which, of course, in a game where one team takes shots at the rim and less threes and the other one misses a lot of threes,
that one killed me when people lose the rebounding battle. Yeah, that's one that killed me when people were like, oh my gosh, they lost the rebounding battle by so much. Duh! Look at their shooting percentages. You think those numbers correlate?
Yeah.
Like, come on now. Like, give me a break on that one. Like, that was just kind of driving me absolutely crazy. I didn't really get that. Okay. Anyways. I don't... Jalen Duren is... Oh, I guess he's listed as out, but he's trending on Twitter for some reason. I was like, what's going on? Jalen Dern, did he have like something happen? When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help you find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When I was looking for somebody to hire for my team, I had to go to LinkedIn Jobs because you just don't know the quality of these candidates. And the good thing about LinkedIn Jobs, it kind of helps you filter through and find the best people. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/dunk. That's linkedin.com/dunk to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we got to talk about this Houston pick because we've reached this point in the season where the Warriors are crumbling, just like embarrassingly crumbling. They had this horrible loss against Indy at home. They lose last night in Minnesota, which is not like some shocking loss. Of course, I mean, they're a much worse team than Minnesota, even without Towns. But the reason people are freaking out is because this puts Houston in a position where they may make the play-in tournament, which doesn't mean the Thunder don't get a lottery pick. The Thunder were in the play-in tournament and won a game last year. Mikel's internet's not doing so good. So we'll keep talking. Thunder did win a game. They ended up being in the lottery anyways with the 12th pick. Same thing could happen with the Houston pick. But Houston's going to have a chance to be in the play-in tournament. Now, they have a really tough schedule. I still would favor the Warriors in all of this, actually getting into it. The pick will be in the same range probably anyways in this, like, 11 to 14-ish range, no matter what, would be my guess. But it's very interesting to see kind of the downfall of the Warriors. I still think that they'll pull it together and that the Rockets will. They've had a really easy schedule through this point, and it looks like a nice story, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, they're here. We'll get to see them up close and personal Wednesday night, which I'm very intrigued for. They play a smaller up-and-down style, which the Thunder like to play that style too, and now it's like who can play it better. I mean, I would favor the Thunder in a game like that. Obviously, the Thunder have done their best work playing like that. So I think it will be interesting. And Şengün has been pretty good against OKC. So very interesting that their defense, though, has kind of taken off in this stretch. And then offensively, too, they've looked a lot better. But is this because they played bad teams for the most part? Could be. Could be. And then the Thunder are going to, in this like 12 range, obviously we're going to hear a lot of people that are clamoring for one of these bigs. Clearly you can't take somebody, even though like Zach Edey's been amazing. He's player of the year. He's unanimous All-American first team. Like he's all these things. It's great. I mean, Zach Edey's not being taken in the lottery by any team. I mean, he may be a little bit better than a guy like Boban, but like we have to understand the rules are different in the NCAA and than they are in the NBA. So, like I see people talking about Zach Edey in the chat, but like Zach Edey is not going to be on the Thunder. I can promise you that. Maybe they buy a pick in the second round. Currently, I don't believe the Thunder have a second round pick, and so I don't think they're. I mean, yeah, they trade. It belongs to the Grizzlies, so yeah, I don't expect him to be on this team. Now, guys that are in this range that I like, McKelly and I talked a little bit about Stephon Castle for the OKC Dream Team. That'll go up sometime in the next day. I think that's an interesting player, 6'6 wing. You guys know that I have an affinity for Kyle Filipowski, who is a 7-footer that I think could be your kind of third big in all of this, and maybe just like a bigger version of Jay Will, maybe. I like the idea of adding him. Donovan Klingon, who's a bigger guy. He's 7'2". Scary to me about the 2-foot injuries. Those kinds of things scare me a bit. Any thoughts, McKelly, on this like 12th pick range? Somebody asked us on Twitter about our thoughts on Tristan Da Silva from Colorado. I don't think you take him that high because he's like older than almost everybody on the team. But I do like him. He's one that you'd have to like trade, you know, make a trade with. I don't know somebody at the end of the first round and try to get him, or maybe you can trade with somebody in at the beginning of the second to get him, but like that's kind of where his range is right now. And I do like him, but like is Tristan Da Silva for sure going to play over Aaron Wiggins next year? Like, I don't know. Like, probably not. But yeah. who do you like in this range as of today, McKelly?
Well, I mean, if we think about the big men, I share with you the fact that I do like the idea of Kai Filipowski. I do think that he's a guy that probably can do many things for you. I do think that he doesn't pose you an issue of clogging the lane, which guys like Edey and Klingon can pose, for example, because they will be better screeners probably than Filipowski, but they will also occupy a place that you don't want to occupy necessarily with the way in which OKC plays. Now, does this mean that I don't see Klingon being anywhere near the top end of the board for OKC? No, I do think that there is value in having a 7'2 guy that can really defend and can really rim run, and he's a giant human being. Do I think that because OKC has struggled defending and generally playing against size? Yeah, possibly there is something related to recency bias in my opinion. There's also I'm also convinced that a guy like J-Dub and a guy like Shea can use a very good screener, can use a guy that can like create space. Mm-hmm. And with a screen, and also a guy that can really be a rim running big. If you take like a guy like Klingon, and you play a unit with Shea, even Chet, and a guy like Isaiah Joe, for example, and you complement the lineup with I don't know, Aaron Wiggins. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's tough to play that spread pick and roll, and on defense, how can you score when you have Chet and Klingon on the court? So I'm mildly intrigued by the fact of getting a big, mainly because I do think that both Dub and Shea can play with a rim running big. Mm-hmm. It has to be a talented one, though. It has to be a mobile one. I don't see them playing with a slow pace. So,
yeah.
If it's not a big, then guys like Stephen Castle are very high on my the board that I have in my head. Reed Shepard is not going to be in that range probably. I don't love Dalton Knecht. Not someone that is really high. I do think that probably in the next few weeks we'll see guys like Trey Alexander re-rising again. He was high in the boards at the beginning of the season. I don't see why he's so downwards in a downward trajectory. So, and we have to see the international. I do think that there are many big wings there. Cody Williams is the hot name because of Jada, but I do think that there are other international players that we need to evaluate and that may be perfect for what OKC wants to do. Like, mm-hmm. yes, a big man would become handy, but also a 6'10 guy that can be a versatile 4 and maybe a small ball 5 can be useful as well.
Yeah, this is where, like, this year I would like to take a swing on, like, a big 3-4, you know, and a lot of those guys are
like
going...
Matos Bozelis.
Yeah, if you could get Bacelis or even Risa Shea or Cody Williams, who's just a little bit bigger. Cody's just not a great rebounder, though. You know, yeah. Matas might be available in the Thunder's range. Like that could happen, or they could jump up. So like there are guys that have that kind of size that I would mm-hmm. rather go after because I think. That is like one of the missing pieces with this team is I think they need just like a bigger wing out there mm-hmm. that can play with these guys, like the idealized version of Gordon Hayward, you know, like a guy that can actually yeah. play that position. He is 6'8 and can play a little bit more because
Gordon doesn't play 6'8, which is the main issue. One of the main issues.
Yeah. He has not played 6'8 so far. That's the kind of guy that I would want in this draft rather than a big because I just wonder, and maybe I could be wrong and they just take Klingon and we're all just wrong. And I've been wrong many, many times and will continue to be wrong. But I wonder if they would use a lottery pick on a backup big where you can get backup bigs. Maybe they're not as big and mobile as Klingon. And maybe they don't have the ceiling that Donovan Klingon does. But can you maximize the ceiling of Donovan Klingon on this team? That would be my question. Can you play him enough?
Yeah.
And I have a lot of questions about that. And I just don't know that you can. I just don't know that this is necessarily the situation. And we've seen them pass up on these guys before. They could have taken Jalen Duren, you know, in the Chet draft. Yeah. Like they've had opportunities to take big guys, and they have just not.
Do you think that was the correct choice to pass on Duren and pick Usman Jang?
How could you say yes? I mean, how could you say yes at this point?
that's my point. Like, I know that you want to play to a certain identity, and I know that the small ball poses yeah. real issues, and it was something very new to have Kenrich Williams playing the small ball 5.
Yeah.
And those were the most effective lineups. I don't think that is the case today. Mm-hmm. And I do think that the teams are starting to find counters to those lineups because at some point they realize that you are small.
Yeah.
And I mean, and if you play a team that can play in one single lineup, Bobby Portis, Giannis Antetokounmpo and Brook Lopez,
Portis was just electric yesterday. Oh my gosh.
Because they have spacing because they're starting to bombing from like half court.
Yeah.
Portis is a decent enough shooter. Like they can really bully you. And so, yeah, I know that you want to take your chances, but sometimes Dignall is starting to put Jay Will inside.
Yeah.
So I do wonder, is this really that much different on having like, hey, if we have a massive human being, we don't have to play two big men, two almost fives to stand against a team like Milwaukee or a team like Minnesota or a team like Denver, Philly, the Lakers. So I'm playing devil advocate here. I'm not saying that I would do that necessarily. Mm-hmm. I just think that maybe last year you could say, okay, we are not really a pick and roll team. Mm-hmm. This year they are playing a lot more pick and roll compared to last year. Mm-hmm. And they show that they can play with that system. Now, you were saying like, are we going to maximize Klingon? I don't know, but I don't think that he's necessarily a 35-minute kind of guy. Like, he can be like a 24, 25-minute kind of big man. Does that unlock him enough?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I don't have an answer, and I do know that the history is not pointing at a guy like Klingon.
Yeah, it's
It is clearly not.
Well, what's funny is like we think about Walker Kessler as like some building block for the Jazz. He plays 23 minutes off the bench for them.
Yeah, but Kessler is not the same player that Klingon is. I like the fact that Klingon is way more dynamic.
He's more dynamic as like a passer, certainly.
But even like he is a guy who hits the rim, which is something that I really like.
Yeah, he's huge. He's bigger than Kessler too. Like.
Yeah,
by like quite he's a bit.
He's a giant, and he's eating.
Yeah,
eating. I like and dunks.
I like Klingon. I'm just like trying to use my thunder brain, you know, thinking about like
I know
how have they drafted? How have they done things in the past? Like honestly, if I could go back and like redraft the Usman Jang draft, the book is not written on Usman Jang yet. It's not over, but I would still probably just take Christian Brown instead. If I were to like redo that draft, I would probably just be J-Dub and Christian Brown, you know?
And also, we are, I mean, I'm just, again, thinking how it can work. I'm not convinced that is the best way to maximize what OKC one can do.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we are talking about, hey, we don't have a center. I mean, guess who doesn't have a real 6'10", 7 feet tall guy who is a center? The Boston Celtics. And they are the best team in the league.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily true. And Porzingis was clearly not a center when it came into the league. He was playing the three. Like, do you remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, he was too skinny to play the five. And it took him a while to get comfortable there. But now that he does, he is like a force. And if you think that Horford is a real center, I mean, come on, guys. He's 6'9". He's a great 6'9" guy, but he's not like a center. Yeah. Like, it's not like, if you want to give me Al Horford, there is nobody in Thunderland that would not love Al Horford with OKC. Nobody. Everybody would love him. From Presti to Dignall to anybody. Mm. There is no Al Horford in this draft. He would be awesome. I mean, Jay Will is not Al Horford, clearly, but it's like the concept is not that different. He's a guy that can pass, can shot, can take a shot, and can play defense. So I'm torn. I'm torn between the fact that, Klingon will solve quite a lot, and I think that those lineups will be extremely fun. But also, I mean, what if Chet in 2 years is the center that plays 38 minutes, then where do you play a guy like Klingon? Why paying a first-round pick, like a high-level first-round pick to get a guy like
this
that?
This is why I don't think you do it. I think maybe you just like even throw like a big two-year deal at somebody in free agency, you know, not like a big one, but like throw some money at Goga Patadze, you know?
Oh, come on.
You don't like Goga?
Don't say that. No, no, no.
I like him. I'm a Goga guy.
Yeah, Goga. Okay.
What about Mo Wagner? He's got a team option. They're probably picking it up. But I would take
Mo Wagner. I don't like those guys.
I'm just saying. Would you overpay Isaiah Hartenstein?
No.
I like.
No, those are not dynamic centers. What are, I mean,
dynamicity.
No, I want someone that jumps, dunks, blocks shots.
These are like guys that you could get in free agency instead and play them the small amount of minutes, you know.
But I don't like that.
Hartenstein's agent is Aaron Mintz. Thunder have dealt a lot with Aaron Mintz. Give him a call.
Okay.
He starts for the Knicks, though, and is likely going to continue to start for the Knicks. He's probably re-signing there.
Yeah.
What about Precious Achiuwa? You a fan? All right. Thanks so much for listening to our show. Hope you guys are doing great. Have another show on Wednesday for you. Hopefully more positive things to talk about. But just remember, just take a breath. Just take a breath. This is a long season. This 82 games is a lot of games. So don't let it get you down. It doesn't have to mean everything. But, you know, as we get closer to the playoffs, I mean, remember last year. Remember how poorly the Nuggets were playing at the end of the year and everybody was like, this is not going to be good. We could see the Nuggets out in first round because of the way they were playing. Nope. Didn't happen that way. It's not always a predictor. We saw the year of the dream scenario. The Portland Trailblazers were sputtering at the end of the season. And then what happened in the playoffs? They go to round two after beating the Thunder. So you just don't know. And thinking that these games in March mean something, there can be a lot more meaningful things in life. So don't take these games to the bank. So, all right. Thanks so much for listening. We will talk to you guys again on Wednesday.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.